I think the future of composites, it comes really back to design. It's designing the right part to take advantage of the composite performance and be more involved in design and not trying to kind of take and replace, you know, dumb parts, so to speak, with composites. And the other big element that plays into design is integration. And I think we're going to see more and more of where you have a structure or a shell that contains basically all of the wires needed to transmit signals. It contains elements of structural monitoring so you can understand how that part performs over time.
Welcome to The Restless Ones. I'm Jonathan Strickland. I've spent more than a decade really learning about technology, what makes it tick, and then describing and explaining that to my audience. But it's the conversations with the world's most unconventional thinkers, the leaders at the intersection of technology and business, that fascinate me the most. In partnership with T-Mobile for Business, I explore the unique set of challenges that CIOs and CTOs face, from advancements in cloud and edge computing, software as a service, Internet of Things, and, of course, 5G. We are often left wondering how the leading minds in business continue to thrive. Let's find out. Our guest today is Riley Reese, Chief Technology Officer for Aeris Composites. Riley's experience in fields like 3D printing and materials science set him apart from other leaders I've spoken with on this series. He looks at challenges through the lens of an engineer and sees some pretty incredible solutions that all depend upon the elegant geometry of fibers within composite materials. I started off our conversation learning about the business of Aeris Composites and on Riley's incredible background. Riley, thank you so much for joining us for The Restless Ones. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Excited to be here.
And I'm really excited too, because I usually ask CTOs how they first got interested in tech, but you present to me a unique opportunity where I would like to know how you got interested in materials science.
Yeah, it is a great question and a unique kind of field in the world of engineering. And so it was the subject matter is kind of this amazing professor that I saw through him, the ability to really think like an engineer. And so I was interested in studying, working under him, and ended up partnering with him on research and kind of going deep in material science as I got deep into and learn as much as I could from him.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm the son of two teachers and had a big experience with teachers who were really passionate about their areas of expertise and were great communicators who really encouraged that kind of love. So talk to me a little bit about some of the challenges in material science that you find really interesting.
Yeah, sure. You know, the other kind of unconventional thing too in material science, a lot of people are trying to come up with a new material. And a lot of material science is focused on the chemical or the physical side of development. You're working at sometimes the atomic level, sometimes the molecular level, coming up with, you know, with new formulations, trying to push into a new material space or new material combinations. For me, it actually wasn't as much that kind of fundamental side, but it was taking materials that already exist and using them in new ways. You can get a radically different performance or functionality. And that's really kind of where, you know, I fell in love actually with material science, but also 3D printing. So it was during my research there, we were building heart tissue scaffolds. The challenge was you throw a ton of heart cells on a petri dish and they all go off like popcorn, but you wanted them to all beat to the same rhythm so that they can actually function in the tissue. So to get these cardiomyocytes to talk to each other, you need to get something that looks like the extracellular matrix of a cell, which is kind of this grid network. We use the same material you find in the petri dish or you actually find in lotion. It's called polyethylene glycol. It's what makes it lubricious or thick, any of these substances. So materials everywhere, super common, been around forever. But by 3D printing this with a process called electrospinning, we were able to create such fine, thin strands down to the nanometer level and deposit them in kind of a mesh network that it got close enough to mimicking the extracellular matrix that is pretty miraculous. We throw the cells on there and all of a sudden they're contracting together and we have a functioning tissue that we could implant to rebuild, you know, scar tissue off after a heart attack.
Riley, this is a very risky subject for me to talk about because I am prone to go down that rabbit hole and not ask you any of the other questions I have listed on my piece of paper. Because it's a fascinating area. I used to cover futurism a few years ago, and one of the things we talked about was the printing of organs, that level. And at the time, it was still very much in a prototype R&D infancy. Simply printing something that can be on the nanoscale is mind-boggling to me. So very exciting. Well, what led you to co-found Aeris Composites? How did that journey go?
Yeah. Ethan Eskowitz, who's the CEO of Aeris, one of the other co-founders, really understood the market of 3D printing, but he had also worked in conventional manufacturing. Then I went over to Europe working on 3D printing and highly automated technologies for 3D printing to kind of get a number of the process steps in series so that you could effectively make 3D printing more economical. And it was then I got in touch back with Ethan, and he saw this huge opportunity. Basically, this kind of consumer electronics space where metals are being used and they're being pushed to the limit. You know, you look at all of the housings today, they're all aluminum. They're getting so thin, it's almost like an aluminum can. You get any thinner, you deal with foil and you lose all kind of the structural integrity of the metal. Carbon fiber composites are so much stronger than metals, but you're not able to get that performance out of them at the level for consumer electronics because you have to align all the fibers in the right way. And in order to do that, you're dealing with people hand laying it up. So it's never cost effective. And that's kind of one of the things people had always complained about composites. You know, they're so expensive. We can never use composites here because look at the cost per pound. But what most people are missing when they just look at the material cost is what's actually the final product cost? And you look at the final product cost for composites, like on a pie chart, and you see that the majority of the pie is taken up in process cost. Yeah, materials are more expensive than metals by a per pound basis, but you can use less material than you would require of metal, and you can do it in a near net process without waste. And all of a sudden, you have a product that can compete, you know, with the cost of, you know, complex metal assemblies. And that's that kind of the opportunity to work in this space and to go to take it to mass production was something that was just really exciting.
That's fantastic. And so, like you say, because you're using less actual material to accomplish the same thing, if you were to rely upon stuff like metal, like aluminum, really that focus then is on figuring out the optimized process of production and then figuring out how to scale that. How do you tackle the scaling issue?
Yeah, it's a big one. And this one is where we relied as much as we could on how people have scaled products for the last 100 years. And when you look at, you know, the vast majority of products made today, they're stamped, formed, molded. And that pretty much captures, you know, 75% of this, you know, $10 trillion manufacturing market. And I had spent about a decade in the 3D printing space. And all the 3D printing space is really focused on this low volume market that's a tiny sliver of this manufacturing market. And it's certainly going to grow. More stuff will be made through 3D printing. But you kind of look around you and you start to think, is everything going to be mass customized? And is everything going to be made, you know, to fit me? And that was, I think, you know, kind of the thought process maybe about 10 years ago. And more people are realizing that's actually not the case, right? Like a medium-sized shirt fits pretty well. You know, the computers are the right size. Footwear, you know, in between sizes is good. It doesn't need to be exact. And there's no clear benefit to doing a little bit more in the customization part. So from all of that, getting back to your question around, you know, how do we scale it? How do we go about that? It was the additive molding process, you know, that we developed that combines these benefits of 3D printing that give you the design freedom and the fiber alignment required with the high performance materials you see in aerospace composites. And, you know, the third piece and really what makes us unique when you kind of look around at other manufacturing technologies or manufacturing startups is that we took from the molding world. Like we use hard tooling. We spend the time and the effort to set up a line. We pay the CapEx cost because we're focused on making parts, not 1, 10, 100, but millions to hundreds of millions of parts per year. That's our market. And that's why, you know, we actually are so separate and different from, you know, the 3D printing world now. And in some ways we collaborate with a number of people in that space because, you know, we're just in such different markets.
Right. That's fantastic too. Yeah. I like that you've really found this particular entry point and are focusing on this. And the more I learn, the more fascinated I become in the subject. This is also a really cool chance for me to learn more about what your responsibilities are. How do you view your responsibilities as CTO? I get the sense that your role as CTO is different from maybe a CTO of a company that's been around for like seven decades or something.
Sure. You know, simply it's looking ahead while protecting the technology that we've built and growing that to meet the needs that we have, right? So looking ahead and really understanding what is the technology, the materials, the software, the systems, the processes, what all will we need to deliver on the hundreds of millions of parts that we have coming 2 years from now. So there's kind of a very real targeted goal around what we know we need to do with the customers we have to deliver. And there's aspects of that R&D that are not necessarily deterministic, but at least the end goal is, and how we get there is still what we need to figure out. The other aspect of my role is looking into the industries we aren't in, and how are we going to grow those industries, and what are the types of products and technologies we'll need to get there. Medical is my background, and so that's certainly an industry that's of personal interest, but one that's a little farther off. There's, aerospace, industrial, construction, wind, all of these we have early engagements with. And, in a CTO, I'm looking at those engagements, understanding within, these large markets, what are the best products for us to focus on? And then with those products, what are the technologies that we need to build to deliver products in those spaces?
I find that leaders of your caliber really focus in on defining what the outcome needs to be, and then they look for the technological solutions either from without or they develop it from within to achieve that outcome. What are some of the unique challenges or opportunities that you face as CTO when you are just starting up a company?
It's balancing all the ideas come from the people coming in that have amazing experiences in tangential spaces that are trying to bring in novel ideas and thoughts and processes. A big challenge is, how do we decide what we're going to focus on now? It's this balance of, we can't give up the opportunity to have a post-it note type of discovery. And we've had actually several at the company. One led to, a capability to create thinner structures than any other technology can create. We weren't setting out to make the thinnest possible shape we could ever make, but it was a byproduct of trying to work in a completely other area. And similarly, we've made advancements in bio-based materials through that kind of same mechanism. So you have this kind of way in which people can organically focus on things they're interested in and perhaps come up with an innovation. And that's exciting, and you have to leave some space for that. But on the other end, as a startup, you have the practical consideration of, you need to figure out what's going to make the most money for the company with the least amount of time or effort. So you have the practical consideration, we got to make money, we got to make it fast, but we need to make sure that we're capturing through IP and other protective measures, and we're developing, new technology that could give us even more of an edge. I think, again, it's like there are tons of ideas, tons of opportunities of things to pursue. And as CTO, certainly part of the role is helping to grow and figure out those ideas. I think it's the ability to kind of prioritize and select, what do we pursue immediately? What do we hold on to? And then what do we ignore entirely? Mm-hmm. And kind of reassessing that list on a weekly and monthly basis is critical in the early phases of a startup.
I would imagine so. Yeah, that flexibility is something of key importance, and being able to balance out the desire to pursue innovation versus the practical needs of making your numbers. I'm glad to hear that it's something that's a continual process.
At T-Mobile for Business, unconventional thinking means we see things differently, so you can focus on what matters most. Where some see another small town, we see businesses in need of connectivity. So we built the largest 5G network to cover cities, towns, and the most interstate miles in between. Where some see a caller in a queue, we see an opportunity for our experts to provide solutions without transfers. Where some see another virtual meeting, we see 5G enabling wireless, real-time translations almost anywhere you do business. Our unique approach has made us the leader in 5G, number one in customer satisfaction, and a partner who includes first-class benefits like 5G in every plan. So you get it all without trade-offs. Unconventional thinking is better for business. T-Mobile for Business. Open Signal awards T-Mobile as America's fastest 5G network USA. 5G user experience report July 2021. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. Some uses may require certain plan or features. See T-Mobile.com. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
So I assume that Aeris Composites has to do a lot of collaboration with clients in order to create the things that the clients are looking for. Can you kind of give us some insight onto what collaboration with your clients looks like?
Yeah, no, it's great, and it's actually not typical. Our relationships range a lot depending on who we're working with and their experience with composites. There's kind of this first phase of education that may or may not be needed depending on who we're working with. Then we focus really on what the output is of this part. It's not just simply, let's make a part that exists today. You know, in automotive and aerospace, it's referred to as kind of black aluminum when you try to just throw composites in and replace a metal part. The design is really important. We want to focus on, are we dealing with the right design that we can, or the best design? And we really focus on that element with the customer. We understand what they need. After we get the design, we simulate the performance again with our software, and then we start, you know, making the pieces for our customer. That's kind of the life cycle of it. And one great example that, you know, that became public earlier this year is our collaboration with Skydio, where we took a bracket. It was 17 different pieces machined out of composite, machined out of aluminum in China. We took all 17 pieces. We made it into one single piece. And with that pace, we were able to reduce, you know, the weight by 25%. We increased the impact performance. We added new cosmetic capabilities. We created antenna windows using glass fiber and a carbon fiber construction. So tons of different benefits. And we were able to derive all of that because we were able to start with them at the very beginning, saying, what are you trying to achieve with this bracket? And then really kind of radically going through a redesign process to deliver the best performance for them.
Right. So really, the earlier you're involved, I imagine the smoother the collaboration tends to be, because it can actually become part of a design process. I think it's a great way for us to segue into some discussion about emerging technologies and your view of various emerging technologies and what you feel about them and whether or not you are incorporating them in various ways at Aeris Composites. But one is that, what do you see as the future of composites?
Yeah, I think the future of composites, it comes really back to design. It's designing the right part to take advantage of the composite performance and be more involved in design and not trying to kind of take and replace, you know, dumb parts, so to speak, with composites. And the other big element that plays into design is integration. I think there'll be fewer and fewer dumb parts that just play a role, one function. They're either thermal to remove heat, they're electrical to conduct a signal, they're mechanical to maintain rigidity in an area, right? There's all these kind of properties and materials that are introduced to serve one purpose. But integration and the capabilities of composites through integration means that we'll see more parts, metal inserts, antennas, wireless charging coils. Like, these are all examples of products we built into composites here at Aeris. And I think we're going to see more and more of that, where you have a structure or a shell that contains basically all of the wires needed to transmit signals. It contains elements of structural health monitoring so you can understand how that part performs over time. It contains the antenna so that you can conduct the signal into or out of the device. And it contains the chips that are needed to run it with integrated batteries. We're seeing a lot of this come together already. You know, you look at AirPods as an example, you look at some of the AR, VR stuff that's coming, it's moving in that direction. I think we're going to start to see composites playing a larger role in these structures as we look into the next decade.
I imagine that one area we'll probably see a lot of development in, along with composites, would be Internet of Things, because as you're pointing out, this idea of materials that can fulfill more than one function and simplify things. And we're seeing the proliferation of, you know, inexpensive sensors in all sorts of different applications. I would think that composites would play a huge role in that continuing to grow.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, it comes to integration, you know, and embedded electronics. You know, you see some of it with just people doing this with plastics, but it's an inferior material where you can have fiber. You can actually conduct some of the signal through the fiber, depending on what fiber you're using. You can embed, you know, metal wire through to be even more conductive. When you have a composite, you have a number of materials that are already coming together. Let's add more materials, and then let's use each of those materials for a specific outcome, and integrating all of that to create this kind of, the Internet of Things that we're seeing all around us is only going to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in many ways this is similar to what we were talking about at the top of the show, where we said you define a problem and then you look for the technologies to help solve that problem. It's really more about what's the outcome you want, how do you best get there.
Yep, exactly.
Well, let's talk about another technology that is currently maturing and we're seeing rolled out. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. in general, and that is 5G. And I love the concept because I love the idea of having areas where you've got that good 5G concentration. You got high throughput and low latency. I imagine that with a lot of the end result products we're talking about here, we could easily see them taking advantage of that kind of communication channel. What are your thoughts?
I'll be the first to say I'm not an expert in 5G. For me, my response is probably different than anybody else you've had on this podcast, in that I'm more interested in what it's going to do in the physical world. 5G is certainly going to deliver a lot by exactly what you discussed. It's going to be able to deliver more data faster than before and with lower latency. But what does that mean in terms of how we're going to build the infrastructure to support 5G? And because, 5G is operating at higher frequencies, you end up with, shorter distances that it can travel. So you need to put up a number of these kind of base stations. You have a lot of these small cell base stations with 5G towers in them that need to be all spread out in order for 5G to kind of fully capture a space or an area. How are you going to make these? The traditional way is, you come in with a team of 3 to 5 people, you have, steel that you're forming, you're making a lot of it on site, you're bringing some of it in, it takes a day, maybe multiple days, a lot of labor, and you get this part up. So you use really cheap material, but you use, again, kind of like we were talking about earlier, but high labor costs to get this final structure. And I think, 5G is an opportunity where we can see a change in how we think about the infrastructure. We could use composites here. And with composites, again, we'll deal with material that's more expensive on a per pound basis, but we can create modular composite structures that can be assembled with maybe one person, maybe two people in a matter of hours. You have up your 5G tower. And so you pay a little bit more on the raw material cost, but you get it all up in the fact that they're super easy to assemble. And they can fit in the back of a truck instead of needing, a huge kind of construction staff and site coming in to build it. I think from my side, I'm really interested in seeing how that plays out and hopefully being involved in really the growth of this new industry and the growth of a change in infrastructure here.
That's a thing I hadn't thought about before. But yeah, the idea of being able to bring down the labor costs and to improve the speed at which you could install these components. I mean, that leads to a greater proliferation of the technology. I like hearing these different perspectives. Are there any other sort of emerging or maturing technologies you find really interesting, whether connected to your work or just things that you're curious about?
Yeah, one thing actually related to work that's emerging and also that I've always been curious about is really the renewable material space, sustainable materials, renewable materials, but both those fields, but in particular, the renewable side, there's been a lot of kind of recent research. And I think we're on the cusp of seeing more widespread proliferation of bio-derived materials. So not coming from petrochemical, precursors, which in addition to kind of coming from oil-based product, they're actually dependent then on the price of oil and the refinement of that. And if you have some bio-derived materials, they can be grown, like if we're talking about castor bean, for example, they can be grown in a number of places and more easily sourced and have less of an impact on the environment. We've seen for a while now bio-derived resins. Those have existed. And now we're seeing more research and more promising outcomes around bio-derived fibers. It'll bring down the cost of carbon fiber and it'll make it much more sustainable. You can get kind of the precursor to carbon fiber made through a plant-based source as opposed to having to make it through the petrochemical precursors. And I'm excited about that space and seeing that grow.
That sounds really cool. Of course, before I could let Riley go, I had to ask him one more thing. What in your mind is the most misunderstood technology?
I guess in the frame of mind of this conversation, I'd actually say antenna technology. and it's one that everyone talks about. And certainly lots of people understand the first principles of, impedance, gain, attenuation, signal. Like the fundamental aspects of antennas are well understood. How antennas integrate into complex structures and their performance in those complex structures, I was actually baffled to find how much of a black magic it is and a black art it is still. It's one of the most critical aspects to everything around us. Our phone, the wearables, IoT, computers, everything is dependent on how well is that signal getting out of that device and able to get captured by another device and processed.
Well, Riley, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us for our show.
Yeah, no, Jonathan, again, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here and to have talked with you about all these topics.
I very much enjoyed my conversation with Riley. It's fascinating to see how some CTO challenges seem universal, whether it's a legacy company or a startup. The technology behind a company's solutions is crucial, but just as important is getting the right team in place to execute strategies by leveraging those technologies. Clearly, composite materials stand to transform products in all fields, from consumer electronics to spacecraft of the future. And knowing that carbon fibers can augment the functionality of electronics without adding extra weight and complexity is really exciting. It means the devices of tomorrow have the potential to be stronger, lighter, and more versatile than anything we have today. And when you pair that with the power of 5G communications, the applications are truly endless. Make certain you join us for future episodes of The Restless Ones, where I'll speak with more leaders who aren't satisfied with following trends. They're the ones setting them. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
At T-Mobile for Business, unconventional thinking means we see things differently, so you can focus on what matters most. That's why we've become the leader in 5G, number one in customer satisfaction, and a partner who includes 5G in every plan, so you get it all. Unconventional thinking is better for business. Open Signal awards T-Mobile as America's fastest 5G network USA. 5G user experience report July 2021. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. Some uses may require certain plan or features. See T-Mobile.com. For JD Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.